As promised, we're joined right now by legal analyst for Sports Illustrated, the associate dean of the UNH School of Law, the editor of the Oxford University Handbook of American Sports Law, the author of Court Justice, the inside story of my battle against the NCAA with Ed O'Bannon. It's now available in pretty much wherever you can find that sort of thing. You do not want to miss that. Michael McCann is my guest. Michael, so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me back on.
Always good to have you, Michael. Thanks so much. Now, it's been just over a week since the appearance of the now deleted Instagram post that connected LeSean McCoy to an alleged home invasion, domestic violence, child abuse, animal abuse, and the use of illegal performance-enhancing drugs. So, Michael, let me start right there. From a legal standpoint, what was your reaction when you first saw that post?
Well, when I saw that post, obviously the allegations are very severe. They, if true, they would suggest that he was involved either directly or indirectly in a home invasion or an assault. Now, whether it's a home invasion if you own the home is a separate issue, but clearly there would be the possibility of conspiracy or assault charges. And then the other issues that you mentioned, animal abuse, performance-enhancing drugs, things like that. Now, there are all sorts of reasons to be skeptical or at least cautious with claims like that. We don't know if law enforcement has verified those claims. We don't know in some cases when they would have occurred if they occurred at all, whether they left behind evidence. So it was a fluid story and one where caution is probably the best first move because it's a story that can really spiral out of control fast.
All right, so it was fluid. And then as that story, Michael, unfolded, the picture that started to emerge was one of a home invasion that took place in a property that appears to be owned by McCoy. And according to Delicia Cordon's attorney, the invader attacked McCoy's estranged girlfriend, demanded jewelry that McCoy had previously requested back. If, in fact, that's true, what does that tell you?
Well, it's certainly suspicious, right? The fact that these are items, if this turns out to be the case, that these are specific items that he wanted before that she wouldn't give up, and then an assailant enters the home and asks for those exact same items, that is at a minimum a source of suspicion for law enforcement. But it doesn't prove that he did it. It doesn't prove that he orchestrated it. And at that point, the law enforcement will ask him to be interviewed. They'll ask him for his text messages. They'll ask him for emails. They'll want any kind of potential evidence. They'll also look for the assailant. I mean, this is, if it wasn't him, and let's assume it wasn't, if it was some other guy, well, if that guy is caught, law enforcement's going to push really hard on him to inquire if, in fact, he was commissioned to do this act. So that person's going to be pretty critical. But right now, unless there's evidence tying him to the actual act, I don't think law enforcement will charge him.
Michael McCann joining us. All right, Michael, what about McCoy? He issued an initial statement that read in part, and I quote, "The totally baseless and offensive claims made against me are completely false. Furthermore, I have not had any direct contact with any of the people involved in months," end quote. What do you make of that statement and how he's handled the entire situation?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how he defines direct contact. Does direct contact mean he hasn't met in person with someone? Does it mean he hasn't sent them a text? An email? Direct is sort of an ambiguous word, and I'm sure the prosecutors and law enforcement will ask him to clarify what he means by direct. But it does imply, at least, that he hasn't had any kind of direct contact, if we're assuming that to mean both in person and electronic, with her prior to this incident occurring. It distances him from the act, but it doesn't exonerate him because you could pay somebody to do a crime and not have direct contact with the person who's victimized. So it doesn't clear him, but it does help to distance him from the act.
Michael McCann, my guest. All right, so he was reportedly in Florida at the time of the incident, but that does not rule out the possibility, as you point out, that he was somehow connected to it. Leaving aside the allegations of child abuse, animal abuse, and steroid use, if McCoy was involved in this home invasion, what kind of charges could he be looking at?
He'd be looking at some really serious charges, Jim. He'd be looking at assault. He'd be looking at conspiracy, maybe attempted murder, depending upon the circumstances of the act. He could also be charged with home invasion, although there's an open-ended question as to whether or not it's a home invasion. If you own the home, can you pay somebody to invade it? Well, probably not, but if you're not currently occupying it and you know someone else is, maybe it is a home invasion. So that's another potential charge. But whatever he's charged with, they would be serious felonies.
Michael, is there any possibility at all that this was all a setup and McCoy is actually the victim here?
Yeah, I think we have to be open to any kind of possibility along those lines. Let's play out the facts. Okay, let's say the assailant requested specific items that McCoy had asked from her before. Well, that would, you could argue that suggests it's him, or the assailant knew that he asked for those items, maybe because he mentioned it to other people, and at that point the assailant could help to sort of connect him unfairly and unlawfully to the crime. So yeah, I think it is. It's possible it's a setup. It's possible it was a criminal act. There are a lot of possibilities here.
All right, then. Michael McCann joining us. If you were the NFL, how would you be handling this situation?
I would be really cautious if I was the NFL, because if they get this wrong, he could potentially bring a lawsuit for defamation. I think the league has to be really careful until law enforcement has made definitive statements about its intentions in terms of how they're going to handle it. Will they pursue charges against McCoy? Will they clear McCoy? Will they just sort of leave it open-ended until they can identify the person that actually broke in? So my instinct is the NFL would be pretty wise to just say, we're not going to take any actions against him. Obviously, a person was brutalized, and we feel awful about it, but unless there's evidence that connects that act to an NFL player, it wouldn't be appropriate for the league to take action.
Well, then, in terms of law enforcement, how do you expect law enforcement to proceed with the case? What kind of a time frame might we be looking at?
I think we're looking at, I mean, you know, we're not there, so it's always hard to know, but I think we're looking at weeks, maybe. I think they're going to want to figure out who broke into the home, if in fact it was a home invasion. They'll also look to see if McCoy's willing to turn over evidence. You know, he's hired a criminal defense lawyer. They're going to want him to cooperate, and if he doesn't have to cooperate because he hasn't been charged, but if he doesn't cooperate, that will elevate their suspicions.
Legal analyst Michael McCann joining me for another few moments. And before I let you go, amidst everything else that's going on, late last week there was also the announcement that five former Louisville basketball players who were members of the 2013 team that was stripped of a national title were filing a lawsuit against the NCAA. What are they seeking, and what are the grounds for it?
Yeah, so Luke Hancock and four other former players are arguing that they were put in a false light when the NCAA punished Louisville for the sex for play scandal involving prostitutes. These players say, look, we're not denying that that stuff happened, but we had nothing to do with it. And by punishing the whole program, you've really looped us into a scandal that we have no involvement in, and that has tarnished us. It's tarnished us in terms of our records have been vacated, and also now people associate us with this really bad, immoral act that, again, we had nothing to do with. So their argument is primarily false light. They're saying they've been unlawfully looped into this. They've also argued that the NCAA has broken its fiduciary obligations to student athletes. Now, the flip side is the NCAA is going to say, okay, that's fine, but you know, as a player, we punish whole programs. And that's part of the deal. It's our right under our membership agreement with schools. And also, it's not uncommon to have whole teams punished. We know that Russia was punished in the Olympics because of a doping scandal. There were athletes that had nothing to do with it, but they lost their eligibility to compete for their country. So it's a way of deterring conduct, right? If you say the whole team gets punished, the hope is that that will encourage people that know about wrongdoing to come forward before it happens.
All right, so I see both sides of that. How likely is it that these players will be successful in this particular case?
I think they have a shot, but I think it's a hard argument because the NCAA is so insulated in terms of its agreements with member schools that they have this right to punish. But I do think the players have maybe a chance. It's been brought in a state court, so the judge will presumably be elected. The jurors will be local. And also the idea that you have innocent players could have some traction. It's clear that not all of the players were part of that prostitute scandal, and you know, I think anybody could empathize and say they don't want to be looped into something like that.
Right. So finally, if the players were to win that lawsuit, Michael, what kind of implications could that have going forward?
Well, I think it would potentially prevent the NCAA from its normal approach of punishing entire programs. I think it would put the NCAA in a position where if it's going to punish people for misconduct, it's going to have to identify who those people are. So the players that actually partook in the conduct, the coaches that actually commissioned it or acquiesced to it. So it would limit potentially the NCAA's ability to punish entire programs. It could also prevent the NCAA from vacating records, which we know has been a controversial move by the NCAA.
Michael McCann is the author of Court Justice, the inside story of my battle against the NCAA with Ed O'Bannon. That book is available right now. Also an SI legal analyst. Michael, thanks so much for your time. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great day. Michael McCann, my guest.